This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Tuesday, July 9th, 2019. I'm Caleb Brown. The Supreme Court has significantly curtailed what is known as Auer deference, the deference courts give to agencies when they interpret or change their interpretations of their own regulations. So what's that mean for regulating going forward? Cato's Will Yateman comments.
Auer deference, A-U-E-R, is different from Chevron deference. Chevron deference is the idea that courts ought to defer to administrative agencies' interpretations of statutes. Auer deference seems more insidious in a way because it is courts deferring to the interpretations of agencies or the non-interpretations of agencies of their own regulations. And over time, those interpretations can change with no notice, no comment to the public. The Supreme Court dealt with a case on this recently, and it's worth going into because things may have changed a little bit. That's why I asked you to talk, because I'm not sure what's really changed. Auer deference still exists, but how has the case Kaiser v. Wilkie that came before the Supreme Court, how has that altered what we understand about this kind of judicial deference to regulatory agencies?
As with all Supreme Court changes in law, we'll have to wait to find out exactly. They sent signals, and the lower courts will act upon those signals. However, as I see it, and as a lot of learned commentators see it, it presents this peculiar case or situation whereby the court announced one result, but all the justifications and reasoning they gave for that result suggests an opposite outcome. And by that, I mean that with a 5-4 vote, the court officially upheld this doctrine, Auer deference. But due to its insidious nature that you hinted at, and we can go into some detail if you'd like, but due to these problems, the court, quote, reinforced and expanded on limits to this doctrine. And I think of those two verbs, it's the expanded on that really took precedence here, because the limits in practice gut the doctrine. I mean, such that officially it still exists, but due to these limits, it has been, in the words of Justice Gorsuch, enfeebled and maimed.
All right. So the majority opinion here was written by Kagan?
Indeed, Justice Kagan, a quick clarification, plurality opinion. So she had three justices join with her, Sotomayor, Ginsburg, and Breyer, regarding the permissibility or the justification, the validity of our deference, the Auer doctrine. Justice Roberts provided the fifth vote, but did not join into this justifying the doctrine. Instead, it was solely out of respect for precedent, stare decisis. So it wasn't a resounding, it wasn't a ringing endorsement, if you will, the 5-4.
Justice Gorsuch, it appears, has essentially no regard for the idea that administrative agencies should be allowed to, one, in a sense, make law through regulation, and then owe no one anything in terms of interpreting that regulation on an ongoing basis.
His dissenting opinion focused, as you intimate, on the insidious nature of this doctrine. His point was, to point out, one, the constitutional issues that you hinted at. They get to write these rules that have the force and effect and interpret them. This combination of functions contravenes the separation of powers principle that underlies our constitutional order. The second problem with our doctrine, again, as noted by Justice Gorsuch, was that it allows agencies to circumvent these procedural safeguards. And just in a nutshell, it allows an agency to issue an interpretation that effectively alters behavior, you know, of regulated parties. It says this is officially non-binding. This document right here does not have the force and effect of law. Then it goes to court, the agency does, receives this deference in a court order that effectively grants it, lends it the effect of law. So those were the two, I guess, insidious aspects of our doctrine to which Justice Gorsuch, cried foul. And ultimately, however, he was dismayed by the court's unwillingness to go all the way and at the same time effectively got the doctrine. So he noted this incongruity. He said, we've got this zombified doctrine that we've somehow, for some reason, clung to. At the same time, it no longer has any practical effect.
Is that in part just the court's unwillingness in general to gut doctrines and throw out previous cases? You're talking about how this deference is insidious in specific ways. Ilya Shapiro told me recently, the Auer case, A-U-E-R, the actual case that established this doctrine, an agency introduced in a footnote in its filings with the court a new interpretation of a regulation that the court essentially ratified then and there.
That's really been the word of the term, if you will, stare decisis. And what you speak of is that which is identified with Roberts' leadership, that of not rocking the boat. Here, some torturous reasoning goes into not rocking the boat. I mean, we upheld the doctrine out of stare decisis, but at the same time, the doctrine looks nothing like it has for its entire existence. So to that end, it's sort of lip service to this principle, but you know, as to what's actually occurring in practice, we'll see the lower courts, but the signals they gave effectively kill this doctrine.
All right, so the doctrine is zombified, to use Justice Gorsuch's term, but if you're in a regulatory agency looking at the court's opinion and wanting to, in a good faith manner, comply with it, how does that change what you do?
Two really big limitations imposed. I mean, they set forth a number, but substantively speaking, two are going to have a big impact. The first is the court's requirement that before it grants deference, the agency's interpretation must reflect the agency's expertise. Sounds simple enough, but there's actually quite a few interpretations, regulatory interpretations out there that don't necessarily touch upon the agency's expertise. And here I'm speaking specifically about procedural rules. There's that famous line, you know, give me the right to dictate the procedure and I'll dictate the outcome. That's very much true of administrative policymaking. Here, to the extent that a procedural element is raised in a challenge before a court, according to the court, per the court's language, the indications they gave on these procedural matters, the agencies will no longer receive deference, and that's a big shift, a big change. The other, even bigger, limitation on the doctrine, and this was the mortal blow to the doctrine. This effectively kills it. Was the court suggests that only those, or that it will be rare, that an interpretation that is inconsistent will receive our deference. That's huge. I'll put it this way. If it is a regulatory provision of any consequence and it's existed for longer than one presidential administration, then the chances are vanishingly small that the interpretation has remained consistent. That is to say, if the court's suggestion here is followed by the lower courts, and if agencies will not get deference for inconsistent regulatory interpretations, oh boy, then that is a huge blow to our deference.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but to the extent administrative agencies are, you know, promulgating regulation and then producing documents that are supposed to be interpretations of that regulation, they don't have to present those guidance documents to the public, do they?
We're talking about a murky area of law here. So yes, in principle, notice is fundamental to the applicability of any government action with the force and effect of law or that compels behavior or that alters behavior. However, it has not been uncommon or controversies have come before the court, routinely so, whereby these measures are tucked away in press releases or are tucked away in memos that aren't published, that are tucked away in dicta, language informally communicated, you know, via presentations and whatnot, PowerPoint slides. So yes, to the extent that notice requirement, that notice necessity has been emphasized by the courts, by the court's language, by the re-emphasis and expanding on the existing limitations to our, in particular, on this requirement for consistent interpretations, that's big. This latter one, that for consistency, strongly suggests that agencies will no longer get away with springing an interpretation upon the regulated public, say, for example, in an amicus brief to the Supreme Court at the very last second.
Will Yateman is a research fellow at the Cato Institute. Subscribe to the Cato Daily Podcast wherever you get your podcasts and follow us on Twitter at Cato Podcast.